Thank you for joining Paul Bartlett for Rethink It, the podcast that pushes the boundaries of thinking about leadership and life in a world that is thinking less about church.
Welcome to Season 2 of Rethink It podcast. Last season, we left you on a cliffhanger with part one of my interview with Reverend Nicky Gumbel and his wife Pippa. Well, today, they are back to continue to talk to us about how we lead in a post-pandemic world. Have a listen. Yeah, look, it's an amazing opportunity for us. If we think about discipleship, and look, I know discipleship gets, it's got 100 different ways that people might see it. But if you're thinking in terms of, okay, the pandemic has taught us some things. It's not just horrible. It's been a gift. It's been an opportunity. What do you think? Is there anything in terms of a major rethink around how we disciple, or things you've learned, better ways we could disciple somebody, not just even from church, but people far from Christ to Christ? What are your thoughts about that? Any changes there or rethinks?
I mean, it's a funny thing, isn't it? Because everything's changed, but nothing's changed. Yeah. You know, the gospel is the same. Jesus is the same yesterday, today, and forever. The needs of people have not changed. I mean, I think the priorities, perhaps, some of the things, mental health issues, I think, have come to the fore in a huge way. So that, and I think for all of us, us included, but for the congregation, that's now probably the number one issue that we need to address. Relationships. I think people thought that Zoom was a substitute in the early days, and then people realized actually it is not a substitute. That you need real contact with people for your mental health, apart from anything else. The relationships are absolutely key, and community is absolutely key. So I think we sort of learned to appreciate even more the importance of community and friendship. But in a sense, in terms of discipleship, nothing has changed. I don't want to publicize the Bible in 1 year, but the reason we've done that is because everybody says, when you speak to people like Tom Wright, for example, the theologian Tom Wright, I heard him on a podcast. You know, he's now in his, late 60s. And he's N.T. Wright, Professor N.T. Wright. And he said, when he looks back sort of at his university days, and at his sort of contemporaries, the people who have kept going in their faith are the ones who establish a regular habit of reading the Bible. And that is the biggest factor in terms of whether people, whether people's house was built on the sand or on a rock, those that were sort of regularly feeding on their relationship with Jesus through listening to him, talking to him, and putting into practice his words, were the ones that stood on a rock, and the ones who just sort of turned up for a social on Sunday, perhaps you didn't have those foundations. So we do encourage people to develop a close, personal, intimate relationship with Jesus. But that's nothing new. That's been but I think that possibly. I think that, what do people want now? I think we're building a prayer room under our church. And I've said, basically, I don't think young people want smoke machines or, fancy things anymore. What they want is, why do they come to church? They come because of God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit. They want authentic, real, more than anything. They don't want polish, they don't want flash, they don't want fancy, they don't want expensive, they just want real, authentic. And and so we're building a church. The foundation of our church is prayer and worship, and that's what people need. We're not a self-help group, we're not a sort of NGO. They're a family of people who are sons and daughters of God, and that's what is distinctive about us. And that's what people want. That's what people are hungry for. They're actually hungry for holiness in a funny kind of way. They want something distinctive from the world. And I think that's what young people are looking for.
That's a great thought, Nikki. And you guys, as you talk about the word and, you know, the word nourishing you, you know, I mentioned earlier, and I know you know this, you write commentary for the 1 year Bible every year. But I want to ask, as you do that, you obviously you love the word. What do you get? What do you rediscover? Or what discoveries do you make every year when you're doing the 1 year Bible? Maybe Pippa, you want to answer. I mean, what leaps in your heart every time you do the 1 year Bible and go to write a commentary? Because you're doing it each year.
Well, every day.
Of course, I only write a sentence or two. But it is extraordinary, isn't it, the Bible? I don't know how many times I've read it, and probably not very well. But you always discover something new. You know, whatever it is, that it is living and active, because there isn't a day that goes by that you don't see something new. And I think every time that you read it, also you're going through something different. So therefore it speaks to you in a different way. So what you see 1 year or one day this year that you didn't see last year. Now storms seem to be rather appropriate. And think a lot about
plagues.
And plagues and things like, yes, that a lot. I don't know, just, you know, today, I think there's something on, you know, living in harmony. And certainly in England, there is a lot of anger out there. That's the other side of the media, is that people just are sounding off on Twitter and this, just in the world, just being so horrible to each other. And there's a lot of just a lot of anger out there, and just to keep harmony and love, you know, that sort of makes you think just new things each time, whatever is going on in our world. I don't know whether it's affected you, but I think there's a lot of intolerance now. I think that's made it worse since the pandemic. It's sort of brought all sorts of things to the surface in people's lives and just destabilized people. And as a result, there's quite a lot of anger and criticism and uncertainty. So and lack of tolerance for each other. So I think the Bible it speaks to us all the more about loving one another and love covering over a multitude of sins and living in harmony. And, you know, all these things of trying to go in the other spirit to what's out there.
Yeah, great answer. Nikki, actually, I want to ask you a different question, actually, Nikki, because I think you've got so much passion. You've served the Lord, for many years now. What's that motor in you? I mean, I know you love the Lord and I know you love the word, but, you know, what's that freshness that you find in the Lord on regular basis? And next to that, tell us about the times where you just feel a bit flat or you feel like things aren't going as good. And what do you do about that? How do you recover?
Yeah, well, it's Rick Warren, isn't it? The Christian life is battle and blessings, but they run on two tracks. You know, there are huge blessings in life. We've been hugely blessed in so many different ways. But then, Pips, you've just had lung cancer.
Well, that was 2 years ago. I had a little bit of lung cancer, but I was so blessed because they found it early and they operated. But there is always something, isn't it, in everybody's lives that come. It is that sort of sudden storm that sort of could sweep you totally off your feet. And I think there are always those things that are hard. I think come the end of the just before the summer holidays, we feel totally different after rest. But for us, which of course is your winter and our summer, but I think everyone had worked so hard through the pandemic to change church, everything online, all these Zoom, you know, loads of Zoom calls, everything was suddenly online, and everybody having to change. And I think the whole team were exhausted when they got to the end of the summer. And I don't know whether your teams and your staff have suffered too, but people were just tired. In some ways you think, oh, well, you're not really leaving the house, it must be easier. But it wasn't, because you were sort of online all the time, trying to do things differently, learn new ways and look after everybody and sort of reach people and look after the poor, you know, just doing everything. And we were tired. Nicky was tired when we got there, and Nicky doesn't even usually admit that he's tired. He doesn't like to admit he's ever tired.
It's like an ever-ready bunny, you know, he just keeps going.
No, but I didn't. I know.
First time in the summer, we took 5 weeks off, and Nicky didn't look at his emails. He usually, even on holiday, will do, you know, an hour a day on just keeping everything going. But the first time, you didn't do any and had a break. And I think everybody needed it. They were sort of crawling towards the line where everybody needed a break. And of course, you feel so different when you come back. But we understood in a new way the needing to rest, to be kind to yourselves, to take a proper sort of Sabbath rest weekly, which we weren't really doing, and to take a time out. So, and I think people, you know, were just kind and gave us permission to do that, which is always so important. So I think we were really trying to watch each other in that time, because there were people on the staff who at different times weren't doing well. And it would be, you know, somebody needs to ring that person, someone needs to sort of send something to that, you know, because people at different times were struggling. So, I think it has been such an odd time, but it's been a good time in a way, because it's drawn us closer in the difficulties, I think, as a team.
Mm. Yeah, that's great. Somebody's asked a question, so I'll ask this question of you. They're asking, what is the toughest thing you went through in leading your church, and how did you get through it?
I mean, I think I was genuinely exhausted just before the summer. And I think my brain didn't function very well in that. You know, I think you get things out of proportion. I think the sort of online abuse and stuff, which doesn't normally get to me, suddenly you start to think, oh, is that true? And so I think I did find it very difficult. It was a bit like Elijah when everything's been going really well, and then Jezebel says, I'm out to get you, and he goes, and he runs away, and I think I was a bit like that, you know, running away, and then the Lord says to him, basically, just rest, get some sleep, and eat and sleep. And then he goes and finds Elisha. He goes and gets some help. I think I had a bit of one of those moments. And the thing is, when you read it, you think, oh, there was nothing really for Elijah to worry about. But it must be at the time Jezebel said, I'm out to get you. And there was that sort of feeling. Everyone was sort of out to get everybody. I think that's probably the hardest thing.
Yeah. Right. What about you,
Peter? No, if you're talking about the pandemic, I've talked often about the hardest thing for me was when one of my closest friends,
he was the church warden.
The church warden, who's like the person in charge of the lay congregation here, and one of my very closest friends dropped dead on the squash court in front of me. Leaving six children aged 6 to 16 those six children, I've met five of them. I married, one of them was living in South Africa, how many are on the staff at the moment? They've all been on the staff at some point.
Two are on the staff
in very major roles now, but it is 25th anniversary in July, you know, it's still really 25 years on, it's still, you know, painful for us. But, you know, when I see Marth, who's has a very key role in the church now, and lives next door to us and overlooking her father's grave, actually, where a tree was planted in his honor, it's tough. You know, these things are tough. And everyone has had those. And, you know, there won't be anyone on this call who hasn't had something major in their life that has traumatized them in some way. But I think back, you know, my trauma is nothing compared to what our parents' generation. My father lost most of his family in concentration camps. You know, that's real trauma. So, and you know, they were all fought in the war and seen terrible things. So yeah. I think we are relatively protected in our generation.
Yeah. Hey, Nikki, somebody was asking, you know, obviously during this time, there's been a lot of extreme views, no more significant than in our nation, vaccinated and unvaccinated, but not just about that, just extreme views all over the place. And Pippa, you sort of mentioned as well, how have you handled that culture where you've had extreme views coming through and people insisting you ought to do something about it? Why aren't you doing something about it? How have you managed that?
What have you done, Pips?
Well, certainly after the George Floyd, we'd already been working very hard on trying to get this new stream of people to be pastors, called the Peter Stream. And they were the people that we felt were trapped underground for whatever reason and hadn't had the opportunity to lead in church leadership. And they were people who, for educational, social, or...
They're trapped by racism, intellectualism, or elitism. So those are the three categories. And particularly it's been bad in the Anglican Church. The Anglican Church has a terrible history on race because of the slave... The Anglican Church, I mean, it's just terrible that the Church of England was involved in the slave trade. And with the Windrush generation, we turned people away from the church. So it's, and the result of that, we haven't had a good representation. And therefore people... And it's a vicious cycle because people say... there's no one who looks like me. So we had tried to break that cycle. We've been doing it for about 5 to 7 years. But definitely the murder of George Floyd was so horrific and it had a terrible impact. But at the same time, it enabled us to accelerate what we were trying to do because people began, we weren't pushing water uphill any longer. There was a general feeling that we did need to accelerate that. And so it's helped us to get a greater representation. But there have been, on that issue, there have been, you know, I think some quite extreme view, not so much in the church here. I think pretty much everyone in the church is on the same page. Everyone wants to see a greater diversity, greater inclusion, justice, social justice. But I think, sort of outside of the church, there's been quite a lot of, you know, some people very, very strident in both directions and possibly not.
Yeah.
So we had to navigate that a little bit. But in the church, I think everyone here was pretty much on the same page of wanting to make sure. And it's a very exciting time. I think one of the blessings of having traveled the world with Alpha and living in central London is our congregation is so diverse. 25% of our morning congregation is African, 33% Chinese. And we have and the congregation represents London, which is 42% ethnic minorities. But what's happened, our leadership was not, it was beginning to move in that direction, but it's accelerated a move towards the leadership being genuinely representative of the congregation. Yeah. We're not there yet, but we're on a journey.
Yes.
Yeah. And you, speaking of leadership, Nikki, can I ask, what's the leadership development pathway, if you like, for your leaders? How do you develop leaders in your church?
Well, forgive me, because it'll sound like I'm just banging on about Alpha, but I personally believe Alpha is the best leadership training in the world because what happens is people come on Alpha, they come to faith, God willing, they become helpers on the next course, and they lead a group on the next course. And if you could lead an Alpha group well, you can lead anything in the world. So Tony Blair, I interviewed Tony Blair at the first leadership conference we did at the Royal Albert Hall. And I asked him, you know, as a former prime minister, what was sort of for his leadership lessons. And he said, basically, leadership is exactly the same if you are leading the Working Men's Club or the G12. You get a group of people, some of whom are, you know, talk too much, some of whom you need to draw out. So I think if you can lead an Alpha small group well, you know, that the skill is in the heart of every human being. The book of Proverbs says, in the heart of the heart of every human being is a deep well. And the wise person draws it out. So in other words, every guest who comes on Alpha is fascinating. The skill of the leader is to draw it out, not to talk at them, not to preach at them, but to ask questions that will draw out from the deep well that is in every human heart. And if you can do that well, you can be the chair of a board of a major multinational company. Because what will you do? You'll draw out from each person on the board the riches, the wisdom that is in their heart, and you'll make good decisions. You can run the G12 because you'll draw out of every nation what they can contribute to climate change, and you'll listen to them with respect, treat them with dignity. So if you can run an Alpha small group well, you can run anything. And people have said that, you know, the best training I ever got for my, I've been promoted in my company since I've started leading on Alpha because I've learned how to lead. And leadership is not about, as you know, about, it's about being a servant. It's about listening to people, about honoring people, respecting people, not thinking that you've got all the answers, but knowing that in the room, there are people who have all the answers. And if we listen to one another respectfully, we're all going to learn. And so, you know, I think that's what tends to happen. People come, help, lead, and then they go on to lead something else. And often in their workplace, they lead something.
Yes, that's a brilliant thought. I love that simple concept of leadership. And I think I really want to, I mean, we could do this all night. We could do that to you all morning, but we won't. I'm going to let you round off with a thought each, because I want to hear, I particularly want to hear from Pippa, great wisdom from Pippa in a moment. Just some final thoughts for this room. They all these guys lead significant churches.
Yeah.
Have been leading for a long time. We certainly want to say, first of all, though, you know, we're so honoured to have you with us. It's been such a great privilege to have you with us today. And we love your spirit and your passion. And it's my hope to continue to be like that as you are in everything you do in ministry. It's a great, great gift that you have, and we feel blessed. But why don't you round off? Why don't you tell us, give us one last thought tonight as we finish off.
Oh, one last thought. I think you're all amazing to start off with. What you're doing is so important. The kingdom of God is advancing. I think it's so easy to get discouraged or feel that we're not making enough of an impact on society. And society seems to be going, you know, more one way than ever. But as our boss before, Sandy Miller, always used to say, you know, when it's the darker it gets, the lighter the light shines. And I think at this time, people are so lost and so going in extraordinary ways that the light of Christ, what you're doing with your churches and who you are, is the hope for the world. And just keep going and be encouraged by what you're doing and try and have some fun along the way, because it's hard. The long haul is hard. So if you're not laughing with your team, you know, employ someone just to make you laugh so that you can keep going and find some fun in it.
Yes, I interviewed Cardinal Tagle at the leadership conference. I interviewed him. He was the head of the church in the Philippines, 82 million Catholics. He's now head of evangelization for the entire Catholic Church, 1.1 million. That's why we're going to 1.1 billion people. That's why we're trying to get him at the Leadership Conference 2023 to launch this thing. But he said his job is to make the Pope laugh. I think that's a pretty important job. It's been a great honor to be with all of you. My only regret is that we haven't heard more from each of you.
Yes.
On what's happening in your church,
because
I'm sure that we would have learned far more than anybody has got from us if we'd had the opportunity to listen to you and hear what you're doing in your churches. But just having heard from Paul a little bit beforehand what you are doing, we are just so full of admiration and so thankful. And we absolutely love Australia. We've had four trips to Australia.
Yes.
1996, 1999, 2002, and 2011, where we saw Darlene, who was speaking at the Hillsong Conference. And that was a wonderful occasion. And we learned so much from all of you. We came back, changed our ministry, didn't it, that conference. And we've learned so much from all our trips to Australia. So we love you. We love you hugely, and we love your country, and so grateful for all that you've inputted into our lives.
Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode hearing Nikki and Pippa Gumbel share not only their wisdom, but some of the amazing ways in which they got through some of their most challenging seasons in life. I certainly hope it helped you today.
Thanks for listening to Rethink It. For more, visit rethinkit.com.au. That's re-thinkit.com.au. Or follow Paul on Instagram at Paul E. Bartlett.